welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob, Scott, and Becky all review a pompous yet good wine from Chile in Santa Carolina Reserva Pinot Noir. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome, everybody, to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Welcome, welcome, my friends.
Yes, okay. And we're also joined by the Triple B.
Good evening.
Ladies, I am sorry to say that the superstar is not on tonight. I haven't done this in a while, but I just want to remind people that is he alive?
Well, I did see him today.
Okay.
He looked tired.
He's very tired. He's very tired. He's very tired and emotional. He's wiped out. He's weak.
He was verklempt. He was without words.
He's lost his, virile sense.
Mojo.
That too. So what I'm saying is you're not missing out on anything. So, ow. Nevertheless, that stings.
Oh. I know. I'm rolling my eyes.
Anyway, on tonight's show, we're going to deal with a wine that never had a mojo. But nevertheless, they like to pretend that they do.
It's got a pretty label.
They do. And they have so many damn lines, you actually can't find what you're looking for on their website. They have a primary website that is their... I won't reveal. But they have a primary website for their country where all their wines are. And then this is the American product.
Oh.
It's American. But it's not French. It's Chilean. So you'd think the Chilean population wasn't so damn stuffy or arrogant.
Well, I would say, as James Suckling, Chileans are the most exceptional people in the world. Although I have been accused of certain crimes and can't return there until 2047.
In my opinion. Nevertheless, tonight we have a Chilean wine by Santa Carolina. Their Carolina Reserve from Leda Valley Pinot Noir.
It's a powerful wine.
A powerful wine.
I would say it's a top 15 powerful
it's
wine.
It's a top powerful 15 wine brand per the Wine Intelligence.
The Wine Intelligence.
Well, actually, it's just Wine Intelligence, but I'm being snobby and I'm saying the
Let me wine see that. Intelligence. I didn't look at the label that closely.
You didn't look at that medallion they gave themselves?
Yeah, they pinned a medallion.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. I was going to Google it.
It's the Wine Intelligence.
Well, at least it's not that Bear Wrestler wine. So.
Can I tell you something? I already know. I'm already a little bit stressed out about this wine because you didn't even bother pouring all of it out.
What do you mean?
There's still some at the bottom of the bottle.
Let me see that.
How dare you?
Yeah, I'll pour it in my glass. There you go.
He's a brave man.
You happy?
He's a brave soul. Well, it's powerful.
It is powerful, and it's also a Chilean Pinot Noir. The last one we had, was the last one Apatagua?
I think so.
Oh, well, I ordered this one specifically on wine.com for that. It is $12.99 of your money, so the same price as Apatagua, I believe.
We did say we would revisit Chile, but we would look for that region, and this is not from the same region.
It is not from the same region, but, it's all Chile. I mean, they're all the same. One is like the other, isn't it?
What?
No.
Right.
Not.
Are you confused?
No.
Okay.
We're challenging you.
What's going on?
That you're saying they're all the same.
I'm just messing with you. They are not all the same.
He's channeling MP.
MP?
The VP?
VP.
The Vice President, MP.
Mike Pence?
Yeah.
Well, no, he's drinking, what's that crap that, the white wine by Grifone? He's drinking that.
I didn't say. I said you're channeling him.
Oh,
with your insensitive remarks.
Oh, okay. Because I said all the wine regions taste the same. That's not the same. What he does.
That's why I said you're channeling him.
I'm channeling him. Oh, yeah.
You're on the Pence channel.
Yeah,
it's a good joke.
If you weren't so dense,
we figured it out. It took 10 minutes, but it's okay.
I was with her all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she said VP. I thought of him.
I just thought you had some, you were having some sort of, you know, episode, and you were just blurting out things. I didn't know what you're doing. Well, so it happens.
It's a flow.
It is. Well, we're going to take a break, folks, and then we're going to come back with the Santa Carolina Reserva.
Not Carolina.
No.
Sweet Caroline.
Bum, bum, bum. We'll be right back.
Unlicensed taxi driver here. When I'm out on the road, mayhem is everywhere. Mayhem doesn't care, but your local Allstate insurance agent, Craig Walters, does care. Are you in good hands? Are you in the good hands of Craig Walters Insurance Agency?
And if you're not, folks, please give Craig a call. His number is 740-862-4585. You can also meet him at his office at 107 North Main Street, Baltimore, Ohio. For auto, home, or life, give Craig a call.
And we're back, folks. So, by the way, this is the 2018 Santa Carolina, if you don't know where, from Leyda Valley in Chile. Now, the Triple B did ask, why is it not pronounced Carolina? And that would make sense, seeing that it is Carolina. However, many years ago, and I think we talked about this on some other episode, because we've had their wine before, many years ago, back when they came to the market, they made themselves a tasting CD. And
we have talked about
it. And they gave it out free with their wine, mind you. And so I had a copy, and I listened to it, and the orator was like this. And he said, Santa Carolina, like he's a vampire.
Right.
And it was like that, where you hear their lips smacking and shit on the CD.
Yeah.
It was the most off-putting. You put the wine in your mouth.
And I'm you getting swish sick. The Thank wine. You.
Well, imagine listening to that CD and tasting Santa Carolina. And now they're one of the top most powerful wineries, I guess.
Well, yeah. Top 15.
According to
Do
Wine
you know
Intelligence.
Who is, always is the top most powerful wine, according to Wine Intelligence?
Is it Samuel Robert Winery?
No.
No. I got this. Is it...
For real, guess.
Is it... Ménage à Trois. No.
I'm going to give you one clue.
Okay.
It is not an American wine.
American. Latour. Rothschild.
Yellowtail.
Huh? What?
I saw. She pulled up a hit that.
Is that because of their reserve Cabernet?
Blurb that Jesus. Stated that Yellowtail was one of the most.
Yellowtail and Castillero Diablo. Del Diablo.
Castillero del Diablo, yes.
They're the two most powerful wine brands in Wine Intelligence's Global Wine Brand Power Index for the second year running.
Is that because Yellowtail's threatening to release their wine all over the world, killing the population?
Well, killing.
Yellowtail took the top spot as the most powerful wine brand.
What?
I will tell you this. I work with some people that when they drink Yellowtail, because it's Australian.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, it's down
well,
there.
Anyways, when they drink it, I think they think that they're drinking something exotic.
You know, it's funny. Whenever you use the words, I think they think somebody's stupid. That's just
saying. I know
saying,
they
you
know, think that. Yeah, I know they think it's
at the
exotic.
End of the road, that's a dum-dum.
I know. They were trying to get me to... I told you this. They were trying to get me to guess a wine or what wine is their favorite wine because they couldn't remember the name of it.
And well, how the hell will they know if you were right?
And they were like, it's that really well-known Australian wine. And I was like...
Oh, yes. And I said, Penfold. No. Clarendon Hills.
I made
Voss Felix. No.
Interesting. Just real quick, looking at Wine Intelligence, they're a PR firm that does case studies on marketing and markets.
In other words, they're hired by these fuckers.
Well, they're...
Well, because these are owned by... this is Illuminati, I do believe.
What?
Yeah, there's Illuminati. But this wine did get a review.
One of their case studies, just real quick.
Case studies?
Is a Concha y Toro.
Concha y Toro, sure.
There was a case study of the exploration of wine consumers in Nigeria. That's one of the case studies on Wine Intelligence website. They're based in London. Yeah.
Oh, so they're the ones that call Cockburns Coburns.
One of their case studies is on Rioja.
One of their case studies is Montes, Vina Montes, focus groups in, wait for it, focus. South Korea.
What?
Yeah. You're on to market?
No.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
We need to see if they're hiring.
The Wine Intelligence? No, I'm sure it would be difficult to get on there. Well, anyway, this particular wine did get a review. It got 90 of the spectators, the Wine Spectator's points. 90 of them. That's a lot. That's the only reason why I bought this. There's good weight.
So off the top of my head, I'm going to say 86 for this wine.
No, just you're predicting.
Yeah, predicting.
Well, that's just poor spectators. That's poor form.
What would you say, Scott?
I can't do it.
I won't do it.
I'm afraid.
I have integrity. So, there's good weight to the finely textured flavors of dark cherry, raspberry, and beef tartare in this red, which is creamy and spicy on the rich finish.
Say that again.
Which part?
The flavors?
Yes. Dark cherry, raspberry, and beef tartare. Raw meat.
If this has... minerality that shows of red beef.
Raw.
This is going to be.
Meat. It's going to be primal.
It's going to be as good as Apatagua.
That's
true.
Okay.
Yes. Do I?
Well, I was just thinking of. You know, when there's water that has contaminants in it and you have to boil it, you're on a boil water advisory. The idea of drinking beef tartare is about the most disgusting thing I can imagine.
But when you have
not
it,
to me.
When you know, we've had it a couple times where it's pure red meat and it's fantastic.
With so a raw quail egg in it.
Well, I don't think we had that flavor in a while.
I like beef tartare. The idea of drinking it is disgusting.
When it expresses itself, we loved it.
Yes. So
we've probably done half dozen bottles that have expressed that on the show.
Oh, sure. And Pinot Noir, Apatagua was one of those.
Yep.
Leyte Valley, just to give you some thing. It's near the Pacific, cool maritime climate. It's good for Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Pinot Noir. This particular wine, 10% of the blend, gets barrel aging, and that's 6 months on French oak. So very little oak. But what is oaked is French.
Okay.
Ooh la la.
That is a small percentage to even bother with, almost.
Well, okay. They only have so many fucking barrels, Scott. What do you want?
How dare they?
I know. The rest of them they're using for rainwater catching. So, I mean, what the composting.
Very nice, very green.
Yes.
Composting?
Could
they're going to compost in French oak barrels?
Hey, man, they're dumb. What do you want? Why do you have to make fun of people all the time?
Don't intelligence
asshole.
Shame.
Dumb.
How dare you?
Yeah. This is one of the top 15 most powerful wineries in the world. You better watch the fuck out. It's probably number 14.
I'll tell you what. It's got a Pinot nose. It's a big nose.
It has a nice
almost,
big Pinot nose.
It almost brutish.
It's brutish, yeah.
It's
and it the one that we had a couple weeks ago was a little bit translucent. This is translucent, but not too much.
No.
You know, it's
no,
like the perfect.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It looks like the perfect Pinot. It smells like a really great.
This
Pinot.
Is
it
a
looks like
proper Pinot.
Pinot.
It looks like Pinot, but it's you know, as dark as you would want it to be.
Mm-hmm. A light touch of cedar and dark cherry on the nose. Yeah. Maybe just a touch of rhubarb as well. Triple B is giving me
the cherry smell. Is
it's cherry rhubarb?
Cherry, what I get. It smells really, really nice.
You say rhubarb, and all I can think of, my grandfather loves strawberry rhubarb pie.
Oh, man,
well, that's
best.
The yeah, and also just a touch of petrol. It is. It's a quality.
You mean gas? Gasoline?
No, this...
You know.
I'm talking to our British fans. It's petrol.
Oh, our friends from Wine Intelligence.
And I wouldn't necessarily... It's not gasoline. It's petrol. A petroleum smell.
Oh, yeah.
Petroleum styles. Yeah, that's the classy way of saying it smells like gasoline, okay?
Oh, yeah.
No, it doesn't smell like gasoline.
Think classy or be classy.
You've been trying. Just hadn't taken yet. Okay. Let's just drink this thing.
Thinks he's on a roll.
I know.
It's a big bastard, isn't it?
It is a very full-bodied Pinot.
It is a full-bodied Pinot.
Full flavor too. It's not.
Hmm.
It's long.
Yeah.
It's long. It's elegant. I see why. By the way, on wine.com, the 18 is currently unavailable. You have to buy the 17. That's because people have tasted this.
Yeah. Somebody tasted it and went and bought everything they
had. That's a seriously. Hopefully it'll be back in because that's a seriously beefy, big Pinot. It does have a beef tartare finish because there's a minerality, a rich, meaty minerality that goes, just slides across the palate. The size, though, is what's really the surprising thing here. How big this bastard is. $12.99. See, the Alpatagua, it was dialed back a couple steps, but that allowed it to be a little more elegant.
Yes, and incredibly balanced. This is more. This is a little, not in a French style, but I would say rustic. It's burly.
It's burly, but it has a California mouthfeel.
It has almost a cab essence about it, in that it's big. I like the tannins in this very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The tannin, though, isn't the most powerful tannin, but the overall structure of it is just so big on the front palate and weighty. And that reminds me of some Cali stuff. The fruit doesn't match up with Cali, but because the fruit reminds you of a Burgundy. It's somewhere in between. Hmm.
So we're describing the minerality. They called it tartar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different than that for me. I'm not sure where it is.
I think it's
beef-ish.
That is a little bit of a ham-fisted way of calling it.
It is beef. It doesn't remind me as much of red meat as some of the other ones we've said. Oh, that's red meat. But
it's almost a cured red meat.
It's yes.
Yeah, it's.
That's a good call.
Yeah,
that's a good call.
That's why
I'm
here.
Sliced, thinly sliced, cured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You picking up a little pepper?
Oh, sure.
It's fantastic. Let's talk about this mid palate a little bit. It is a big front palate, but that mid palate, I think, to some degree, surpasses the front palate in size. I think it's as big a mid-palate Pinot as I've had in a long time.
Especially at the price.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
What, $12?
$12.99. Now, one thing I will say is, because of its size, like you said, it's rustic, it's a bit brutish, and stylistically, that might not be everybody's cup of tea in Pinot.
For sure. 100%.
I am definitely more the style of the racier. I wouldn't call it lighter style, but more your aromatics and whatnot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this has, I don't want to say none of that, because the nose was certainly powerful and potent. You know, behind that Pinot funk, did you talk about four different things? I'm not sure I got the petrol, but everything else, I was right there with you. You know, and I think when you said rhubarb, I changed my mind to strawberry, and that's just memory playing with me. But it's a wonderful nose. And this is a really good Pinot. Now, is it collectible or anything like that? No, but
it would do nice for, it would do well for a year in your cellar.
Okay.
A year or so. I would do that.
It's interesting that the 18 sold out.
Well, it's unavailable. Yeah, they'll probably get more back in. But
okay.
Oh, they make a shit ton of this stuff.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, when it comes back in, buy
oh,
it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Buy
don't,
it.
Don't buy the 17. It got an 86, but from the enthusiast, no less.
Well, ooh.
Yeah. But they got this one right. I mean, in $12.99, I mean, once again, how much would I pay for this? It lacks a little bit of the grace and elegance for me to pay a ton. But Alpatagua's never come back in.
That's just a reason.
It's never been available again.
Which is so good.
I mean, I don't know what that is, but yeah, it was a one-shot deal, and it's been gone for good.
This is a long finish,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the most spectacular part about the wine.
No.
I wish... I realize it's a $12 Pinot, but, you know, I said it's odd that it only was 10% barrel-aged. It could use a little more oak.
But then it would be even bigger.
But don't you think everything about this wine could handle that oak?
But I don't think it needs it. It doesn't need more spiciness. It doesn't need any of those things.
I would like to be just a little toasty.
Well, that wouldn't be a bad thing. That would balance it, possibly. But
yeah.
I think it is so weighty. I don't know. I don't know how much more you want. Because it's at the peak where, you know, it's not souped up. This is what the wine is. They're not Purple Death in this or anything like that. But Mm-mm. It's such a big-ass Pinot. At this price range, it's like, okay, pull back a little bit. I mean, if you did 50% French oak for 6 months, you probably would have $15-16.
Okay.
Possibly. But, because, I mean, procuring all those that oak. But I can see why this is the American-driven wine. Because the size, I'm betting if you drink their international fare, which is like the, you can buy it, it's around $20, that level. Because this is, I think, their cheapest wine.
Okay.
That will be far more Burgundian, I would think.
Okay.
You know, which suggests it's good. By the way, Santa Carolina, we make fun of them. They actually make good wine.
Well.
Across their board, all their wines score well. But when you drink them, you go, yeah, it's pretty good. And a lot of the really good wines we've had recently are Chilean. The Santa Emma.
Right.
This, Apatagua, but we haven't had, except for cheap crap, had Chilean wine. Really, have we?
We had, you know, we had some early episodes that may not have aired. Didn't we have a Pinot that was just ghastly?
From Chile?
Yeah, I don't, I'm not
We've
sure.
had ghastly Pinots, sure.
But. I may be thinking of some of the Argentinian stuff, some mm-hmm. of that.
But it used to be Chile was just junk. And it was all green pepper and whatnot. But that was, oh, I don't know, over 20 years ago. A lot has changed since then. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the value level. Because they're still reasonable.
Reasonable. This is, well, let's play that game. What would you pay for this? We started down that path, I think. You started heading that way. If you paid, honestly, not just $20, $25. Now, maybe stylistically, this is more something we would appreciate than others, but this is a nice Pinot.
I would pay more than $12.99. I don't know if I'd go $25. Because you're in those Cali offerings, and those are pretty good. The Chalk Hills and the Ronnie Strongs
okay.
of the world.
Right.
But, and also, well, this is better than that, but.
I'm not saying this is as good as those, but there's quality here. This mm-hmm. if you blind tasted this and you had paid $25, you go, oh, okay, not bad,
no,
not
no,
great.
No, yeah,
but
yeah, 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 yeah.
You wouldn't be disappointed.
You would say, okay, I see.
Yeah. When you know this is Pinot. It may be bigger, but you know this is... As soon as you stick your nose in that glass, you know this is Pinot. This is as funky a Pinot as we've had in a while.
Yeah, I just wish it wasn't so heavy. The more I drink it, I just wish it was... No. I just wish it was just a touch lighter.
Okay.
Because it is so heavy. And that's just... I mean, that's personal preference.
For sure. Well, let's be honest. We prefer the French Pinots.
I prefer the South or the New Zealand Pinots.
Over French?
Well, I mean, can't slow down.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I enjoy Love Block Pinot an awful hell of a lot.
But that's $30.
Oh, it is. It's $32, $33. It's really nice. And the Palliser Estate, and there's a few. Even the Kim Crawford wasn't bad. But those
Kim Crawford was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Particularly considering that, you know, it's been sold off and it's, you know, corporately controlled now. They do a good job. Mm-hmm. You cannot go wrong with any of their products. But, you know, the New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, and we've said this many times, we haven't met one that we didn't like. I don't know that I can say that about their Pinots. But I've never had
a bad New Zealand Pinot. Never had.
The nice thing about this size on this and its nature, yes, it's a bit of a brute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not a brute like Hecula. We talk about it being a beast. It's not like that. But relative to the Pinot Fair,
yeah,
it's a bit of a brute. So it might not be in every Pinot drinker's wheelhouse. And no. If you like sugary messes, we won't name names, Mayomi. You're not going to like this.
This is the anti-Mayomi.
This is the anti-Mayomi.
Anti-Elouan, which isn't from Willamette.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is.
You know what this is? This is what that Zac Brown Band Pinot wanted to be.
Zac Brown Band wanted to be Mayomi.
Well, he wants to make a million gazillion dollars Mayomi does.
He wants to be Mayomi.
But that thing...
It was bigger.
You know, he was going for a slightly different style, or whoever made that track.
It was a whole lot of hell. That's all I know.
It was just awful.
It was a hot ass mess.
Where this is, honestly, this is probably the most similar style of Pinot to that, other than the quality. Bigger, burly.
If I put like a cup of Cairo in this, it might be like that, but
I'm not comparing the residual
sugar. A Coca-Cola, put that in there.
But the body of it.
The body?
This is what they were going for.
Uh-huh.
They got it wrong.
They were not going for this. They probably wouldn't even know what this was.
Well, you
forgot to add the sugar. Fucking dumb bastards. Trust me. They weren't trying to do anything like this. They were trying...
Have some empathy and compassion.
All they were doing was trying to convert wine into dollar bills.
Well, there you go.
Yes. And I don't even know if they did that well.
Or convert dollar bills into a tax write-off.
Well, ultimately, I think that's what it should be.
Well,
are you familiar with the virtues of having a loss on your taxes? No, tell me more about that. Well, what you should do is... Start a winery and say you're uncaged. Oh, really? Is that so? Yes, you should.
The IRS automatically gives you extra bonus points for owning a winery.
Wow, that's fantastic. I didn't know that. Because I've been drinking this wine that doesn't taste like a breakfast cereal. Oh.
Doesn't taste like battery acid.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic. Oh. I wonder what OZV was thinking.
Remember, they got the acronym wrong?
That's true, too.
So thought process and OZV don't go together.
OZV was thinking, man, we're going to have to move that body soon or they'll find it. That's what they were thinking. So, folks, we're going to take a break and be right back here on the Wine Vault. We'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. On tonight's potpourri, because Scott is old.
I am old.
We are going to go back in time. Not that long, because that's a really long way. And be nostalgic. They wanted to talk about your firsts. So we're going to... Not that. Not the first. No. First car is what she wanted to discuss. And we're going to go to Scott because I want to hear about the 1947 Studebaker he drove. New.
No, it was a Ford Model T with a crank.
Yeah, it was a horse. You drove a horse, literally. Go ahead. What was your first car there, dude?
The first car I drove.
First car you owned.
Yourself? Well,
no,
that was yours.
The first car that was yours.
Okay.
Well... The first car I drove that my parents allowed me to drive was a 70 Javelin.
Oh, my God.
That my dad had redone. It was black.
Mm-hmm.
Three-speed.
Oh, yeah.
V6. But quickly, I replaced that with... Dad had a fishing van.
A fishing van.
A fishing van. It was a Ford.
Oh, the Javelin looks cool. Did it have a racing stripe?
No, or no. It was just Dad did it jet black. Guessing. It was badass. Dad was great with body work.
That's a
he did
cool
body work.
Car.
He did body work when you did putty work, and his putty work was freaking amazing. Dad would get cars at the auto auction.
Mm-hmm.
Now they become dealers only, but he bought me a Fiat X19 for a song because it looked like somebody taking a baseball bat to it at
that's
the.
Not good.
At the door body housing intersection.
Sure.
And he made it perfect.
Okay.
That was badass. Eventually.
That's what I think of when I hear the word muscle car is a Javelin.
Well, cool. It was kind of sort of, it was kind of a muscle car light. It was a 304, but it had a real light ass end. It was not. It wasn't that it was too much power. It just wasn't a well-designed car. It was too easy for the ass end to get away from
well,
you.
AMGs weren't well-designed cars.
Well, they're AMCs.
Oh, I'm sorry, AMCs.
Yeah, American Motor Corporation.
Yes, yes.
But the X19 Dad did a phenomenal job with this car. He was an artist in it, and he spray painted it in the garage.
Hmm.
Probably, you know, who knows what he breathed in, but
right.
He would mix the paint and spray paint it, and But the paint on that Javelin was, oh, my God, fantastic. That X190 did chocolate brown, but it was a unibody.
Yeah.
And eventually...
That was from the future, by the way.
Eventually, the left front end, the whole wheel assembly broke away from the body because of rust.
So that was a slight problem that they had with their unibody.
Yes, it was
yes.
a problem with
the... One of the problems.
It was a cool car. Mm-hmm. But we... sold that to my buddy, and he wiped it out. It was also a car that had stability issues because of weight and too much power.
Yeah.
But the Ford Econoline minivan, mm-hmm. it was the original minivan. It's akin to the Volkswagen mm-hmm. van.
Sure.
We had so much fun in that Econoline. Oh, my God.
I don't want to know about that.
We would do wheels. It also had three on the tree. Three okay. speed, not the Javelin had three on the floor, but this had three on the tree.
Sure.
When me and my buddies would get together in that thing, we had a rite of passage that if it was your first time in it, we'd put you, so people would ride very unsafely, very, very unsafely. This was before mandatory seatbelt laws. There were two bucket seats, and then the motor housing was right between the two seats.
Yeah.
We would have somebody sit there, and their rite of passage was, we would get out of the driver's seat, jump in the back, and that person would have to drive as we were going down the road.
Oh, my gosh.
We were a little bit crazy. Little bit crazy.
We let him watch our children.
Yeah.
It's true. Triple B, what was
your... Wiffle ball bats. Mm-hmm. We would cut the tops off of them, take bottle rockets, load the fuse in the bottom. There's a little pinhole in the bottom of a wiffle ball bat.
Yeah.
And shoot them out the car. We were heathens.
Jeez.
We were heathens. One last thing.
Your allotted time has run out.
One last thing. So we'd also do these wheel stands. You would just unexpectedly be driving down the road and you would power brake it and it would unexpectedly driving down the road, you would slam on the brakes and it would do a wheel stand. It would pop up all the way on the front. It would do a wheel stand. There were no seats in the back of this, so everybody's just flying towards the front of it. That's funny.
Like the Mystery Machine.
You know, when you're 17, 18 years old, that's hysterical.
You weren't 17 or 18 years old in 1970. So...
It was a 7. Actually, that was a
63.
60 something Econoline 4 van. I don't remember what vintage that was, what year that was.
And now on to the Triple B, Mr. Time Hoarder.
Hey, I got plenty of first cars.
Yeah, Triple B.
Do you remember what my first car was?
Yeah, it was an old crappy Accord, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was a 94 blue, light blue Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, those are great first cars, in my
opinion.
It
was perfect. It was the perfect first car. It might also had a sunroof.
That's fantastic.
It was a super first car. And I saved up and bought a CD player that we like went and got installed in the dashboard. And later on it broke. And when my sister got the car, she and her friend drove around with a boombox and played music.
That's fantastic.
But I loved it so much. And I got it before I turned 16, before I had my driver's license.
Did you drive it illegal?
In my driveway. My sister and I, every day after school, would come home, and I would drive it up and down the driveway for, like, hours. And her best friend would come over and sit in the car, and we would drive up and down the driveway all day. And my mom would, like, have to take it to go get gas, because we would go through, like, tanks of gas driving it.
I think we've potpourried about this before, because I remember that story.
That story,
That's fucking fantastic.
Well, let me start off with the first car that I was supposed to have, but then we changed. The car I was supposed to drive was going to be a 1967 Impala hardtop.
What?
It's a 283. That was the intention. However, I don't know what went wrong or what we decided, because instead what my first car was a 1967 car, but it was a Cadillac Coupe DeVille.
Wow.
Yes.
Dad said we're wrapping some steel around this boy. He's dangerous.
The Impala had plenty of steel, by the way.
Not as much as the Coupe DeVille.
The Coupe DeVille, we bought it for $250.
Nice.
It had not been driven since 1976 or something like that, when the gentleman's mother was T-boned and it had a dented door. So, and it was like a sea green cream color. We couldn't tell. So we brought it. We actually, my grandfather and my father and I, we went up there. If you spray enough ether in a carburetor, you'll start anything up. So we took off down the road. We got it started. Hadn't been driven in years.
Wow.
Old tires, everything. The brake lines, it didn't have those. It kind of had brakes, but nevertheless.
Were you all in it?
No, I think Grandpa was following us.
Okay.
So we get it back. And this is all Columbus back to the house. Dad was very proud of this $250 Cadillac. It had a little bit of rust, but it was...
Did you find it like in a classified?
No, he knew the gentleman. The gentleman worked for him. And
isn't that sad? Our boys will never know.
Yeah.
Like looking through the paper at classifieds.
And so.
In Columbus, we had a periodical named Trading Times for mostly selling cars, but you could sell anything. It was like the Craigslist of the time.
Yeah.
See, the thing about this Cadillac, the interior hadn't been touched or sat in. It was actually showroom fresh new. Red. Red leather. Red Firethorn leather interior all the way through with chrome accents. The most gorgeous thing you've ever seen. A tilt telescoping wheel. It had power windows, power seats, power locks. As I said, power seats. It had electric seats. It had...
I don't even know how many cars I had before I had
cruise control.
Seats.
Probably pretty decent power seats.
Yes.
And no lumbar support. But
this was a massive bench seat, too, that weighed 10,000 pounds. It had cruise control.
Was
it had
two bench, like, in the back seat was a bench?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It had, and even, like, but the, it had, like, even, everything was chrome inlay. So, like, there was a chrome strip across the back seats, and there was chrome everywhere, chrome dashboard with red leather. It had sensing headlights, so it would go
right.
Auto-dimming headlights. It had a load-leveling suspension. It had automatic trunk release.
What?
It had air conditioning. It actually had climate control. You could set the temperature. I mean, it never worked.
It was a dial.
Yeah, it was a dial.
Right.
It had stereo, but my dad goes,
it
you know.
Radio? Like just radio or what?
radio. So we said we'll drive. You will drive that. But what we did was ordered a new door from Arizona, then had it completely redone, repainted, bodywork, everything. And then it became, and it had a black vinyl leather roof.
So you think it was seafoam green with a red interior?
Yes, it was a very
hideous. You could, oh my God.
It could, it was so light though. It could have been a cream white, could have been a yellow, we couldn't tell. So now it was black.
Black though, black with red interior. Black exterior. So
yeah.
Sharp.
Black.
Yeah.
And new tires, new brakes, new heater core, new this, new that, new stereo. We had new speakers put in, obviously, at it was some stereo shop, and they go, well, we're not going to cut the dash. They built a hanging basket underneath
yeah.
the dash.
Yeah, it was common.
And they matched the carpet, so it was a Cadillac. I'm not going to mess. It was the same red carpet that was in the car, so it all blend in perfectly. And it was a Pioneer stereo, whatever, and I had to put a new antenna because it was an electronic antenna. It was something. No.
Oh, I always thought those were really cool. Now, like you don't have an antenna, no. But I always thought the electric antennas were super cool.
Well, the problem with this car is
a pain in the ass because they always went out.
Yeah, this thing had
easy to replace.
This thing had so many things going on. It was so complicated. It was all vacuum lines. So your power windows, your power door locks, they're all vacuum lines. Yep. And if you get a little needle hole in them, your door won't unlock. Your window won't go down. So it was
even the locks.
Yeah,
were vacuum.
Okay. Yeah, so it was in the damn shop all the damn time. So I drove it for a year and a half before we said, and that was I might have driven it 8 months out of that, maybe 9 months, because Dad would take it down to the Cadillac dealership, and they liked it sitting in there because of the way it looked. And so they gave him a discount on all the work that they did on it. But these guys, though, they're doing modern North Stars, and they have this 67 Cadillac. They're like, what the hell we do with this? So while that was always in the shop, I was driving the 93 Chevy Silverado. It was a new pickup truck. It was a extended cab, no weight in the back, two-wheel drive. About killed myself. I was also supposed to drive that, but they said it was too dangerous. Got rid of all that. Well, the Cadillac, we had that for years after that. 95 Monte Carlo Z34. That's what I drove. Leather again.
Nice.
Black and black, right? Or green and black.
It was Sherwood green and black leather interior. And I had that until law school. I had that 8 years. 60,000 miles in 8 years.
Wow.
And a blue head gasket. Yeah. Wasn't very good. It lasted though. And then it was traded in on cash for clunkers.
First car I ever bought for myself. I bought this '63 Cadillac.
Oh yeah,
from my buddy Todd Howery. $200.
Mm-hmm.
Brakes weren't working, so we go over to look at this. I'm gonna buy it. It's a freaking awesome car. It's a bit rusty, but it's $200. Brakes didn't work, so my buddy D Pig, God bless him.
D Pig.
Not gonna name his first name because that would identify him. But he says, "Oh, we'll take care of this." Fixes it so that we can get the brakes there. Keep in mind, my buddies, they're like, okay. So somebody was in the front of me. Somebody was in the back, just in case. Get it home. I'm so proud. I'm like, Dad, I bought this car. Go look at it.
D-Pig in front or behind you?
He rode with me.
Bet he did.
Dad looks at the car. How much did you pay for this? And then he got his first thing he did was get up underneath it. Well, what my buddy had done was he had taken the brake line and wrapped it around the rear axle.
There you go. I hear that works.
My dad just said, give me the keys. Never saw the car again. He took, maybe give him the title. He sold it for $500.
Whoa.
And didn't give me my money back.
He didn't? Well, it serves you right.
Well, it was a bonehead move to trust my buddy D Pig, who wrapped the brake line around the axle, which could, folks, it's, you know, could have easily snapped the brake line, could have not have brakes. Now, I drove it the equivalent of six city blocks where I bought it from.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
Strangely enough, though, one day I was driving the Cadillac to school, and the brake lines went. So I didn't have any brake in the Cadillac. So have you ever driven a 67 Cadillac on ice?
Yeah.
It's like Bambi. It's like do 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 do. You pull out on the road and you just do a loop de loop. And then all of a sudden you're facing a different direction.
Yeah.
You have to get comfortable with that. I'm not concerned about driving on ice anymore because that's my first car driving on ice. Got my license in December and there you go. By the way, 429. 8 miles per gallon. On 94 octane, and you had to add lead additive.
That explains a lot.
I know. So, folks,
lead additive. I love that Rob had to buy lead additive. I love that part about it. I was waiting for you to tell that.
Who says I paid for it? So we're gonna take a break here, folks, and be right back here on the Wine Vault. Hey everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault?
I know the Unlicensed does.
Well, that's great. Do you know how you can get that done? Do you know the one way the world can find out about the Wine Vault?
What way is that, Rob?
Giving us a review on iTunes. So, take the time. Give us that 5-star or whatever. Let us know, let the world know that you love the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So the Triple B thought we were on the air there. And she had a very good, eloquent story. We had a Grand Cherokee a few years back. And she was emotional because we brought our first child home in it. And we then sold it to my cousin for more than what I paid for it from the dealer.
How dare you?
No, damn straight. I dare. So her daughter drove it and just recently traded it in. Drove a long damn time. That was in the family for
6 years.
Yeah, 6-7 years. Yeah, that thing. I didn't think it would make it that long.
I mean, I think she owned it for about 6 years.
Because it had about 90,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. She probably had 190,000 miles on it once it was done. It's like 89,000. It had the 4.7 V8. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it was a white Jeep with a tan interior, mm-hmm. and I just think that's a really sharp look. I love that.
The tan interior is fucking fantastic, and that's when they made them a little more burly, and they really were somewhat of an. Still a little bit of an off-road vehicle, a little bit.
Now it's, you know, cushy bullshit.
Yeah, it's just another SUV. Mm-hmm. Tell the story about your dad.
Tell the story about my dad. Oh, yeah. He was driving at the hospital to move it or go home. I don't know whatever he's done. And it was all-wheel drive and had the V8. It's not like some massively powerful thing.
Because I think you said, I had the Prius, and you said, we are not bringing our child home in a Prius.
No, sorry about this. I bought it specifically right around that time, by the way. And so my dad gooses it and about loses control in the parking lot because I don't know why. He drove a Grand Cherokee back in the day, but he had the inline six, and it wouldn't rev past 3,500 RPMs, and I always remembered that. I was like, I don't want that inline six, and then I don't want that. And so it scared the shit out of him. He said, what the hell's with that? Because it scared the hell out of me. I was like, well, you know, I know how to roll.
You do know how to roll.
And also, speaking of rolling,
I like to roll the meat and then bite it.
No.
You roll it and you take a bite.
He is quoting William.
You roll it and you take a bite.
No, take a bite. That's what our middle child says. He'll take lunch meat or salami or anything. He'll take it in his hands and rub it. And he goes, you roll it and you take a bite.
It's so precious.
It is. And I think he's getting self-conscious for saying it because he said it the other day and he looks up at me and I'm looking at him. I was waiting for him to say it. He's like,
Yeah, he's darling.
Yeah.
I think it's really sweet that we talk about our first cars and we have all these emotionally charged moments and memories from it.
That's life.
And then here we are on a wine show and we have all these emotionally charged moments and memories drinking wine.
For sure.
And the first thing when we have something to celebrate, it's like, all right, it's a Turley night or...
Oh, my God.
And by the way, Scott, you've never noticed. Over there on the wall, that license plate 2-ton, that's from the Cadillac.
Very nice.
Yes, that's what that's from. It's not on that wall, though, Trigger.
Which wall?
It's on the wall.
I think it's by the dartboard.
Yeah, it's by Steve's picture.
Over there.
You can't see it from that angle, I don't think.
See it from the same. You
just look like a confused old man right now. It's very sad.
You pointed to this wall,
first of all. I pointed that way.
Oh Lord!
It's that way.
Yeah, your finger's not working.
You can see it,
well.
But you can see it between shows. So anyway, the Santa Carolina Reserva Pinot Noir from Leda Valley in Chile.
You didn't say it right. Say it like the CD that accompanied the wine tasting back in the day.
I don't know if I have the energy. Santa Carolina.
Very good.
Yes, we're going to give it a review tonight, and I have not reviewed this wine. Sadly, I didn't know that Santa Carolina existed, even though they're one of the most powerful wineries in the world. Well, the 13th most powerful winery in the world.
James, aren't you excluded from participation in any footsteps into the country of Chile?
Yes, but they import this wine, dumbass. I'm not allowed in this country either, damn it. In my opinion. So, we're going to start off with the Triple B.
So I missed the earlier part of the podcast where you all broke down the wine, but just for my own self, and we'll see where you all come in on this. So it is a really big, full-bodied Pinot. It's kind of brambly. The oaking is French oak?
Yeah, but it's a speck of it on 6 months French. 10% of the blend, 6 months on French oak.
Six munch.
And only
munch
10,
on sports.
Only 10% of it.
Okay. I was going to say it's done really well. It's just kind of like a taste of it at the end.
Yeah.
So I think, and I like the brambliness of it, but to an extent, I almost, because it's so brambly, you don't get the like silkiness and the lighter touch of Pinot that you associate with a Pinot. And so it's like kind of its blessing and its curse that it's. It has
that's
the
interesting.
Boldness.
That's an interesting take. Well,
someone else had that same take, Scott.
Did
I called
you?
It a brute.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Although you were far more eloquent in what you said.
Yeah, very yeah, he didn't say anything like that.
Me don't think it tasty. That's what
well,
I said.
What he, and what he said was, really the longer I have this, I think it's maybe too big.
Yeah, because I think I'm thinking
he's
about
a baby.
It. As
too big for him.
If this was a cab, you want it to be huge and brambly.
Yep.
But this is
yes.
a Pinot. You want the lighterness, the lightness of a Pinot.
You want the nuance to be able to show.
Yeah.
And once again, maybe holding on to a year or so might help that.
It is very good. Something I always, like my own prejudice towards a Pinot is I do want it to be lighter. I like that it's like a more feminine wine. That I just like that a lot about a Pinot.
Mm-hmm.
This is very, very good, though. I would drink this every day and be
thrilled right
with it.
Right on.
And it being at $12.99,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's unheard of. Great, great, great.
What would your number be? So we played this game while you stepped away for a second. What, just a price point on this. What price point would you say and not be disappointed with it? At what price point would you go... Oh, okay. Yeah.
25. I'd be like, I get it. 25.
Huh.
Is that what you
said? Interesting.
Shut up your butt, Scott.
So, what'd you say?
I said 25.
I wouldn't go 25, I said.
He did say.
He knows, I just feel like are inherently more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. True. But he actually said, 25, I'd go, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So, what's your score?
My score is an 89.
Ooh, 89 of your points.
I'm at the same
but
point.
But I recommend it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
100%. I recommend it all day long.
That's my score, too, 89. It just, I really like this style, this bigger style of Pinot, but it's, I think it's hard to pull off. And kudos to Santa Carolina for pulling this off.
You didn't pull that off. It's Santa Carolina.
Yeah, you didn't have as much.
There
you
well,
go. You got Caroline. It. You have to get like the creepiness Caroline. In your voice. You have it. Yeah. You got it.
Your voice is not deep enough.
You got it.
Masculine enough.
He
God.
Added the creep to it the last time he has.
No,
the
he's
creep.
Got the creep down. That's
no, you have the creep down.
God.
Took me two swings.
Uh-huh.
No, this. So it's funny. We have the same score, but I like the part that this is a little non-classic style Pinot mm-hmm. with the bigger style, mm-hmm. and it's like you said. I could. It's just so well done. I could drink this every day of the week. It's definitely more. Cab-like style.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not the right...
No.
I
comparison. Yeah. But I think the listeners will get that. You know, Pinots are typically leaner. This is, you know, in the overall scale of wines, it's not full-bodied. This is just a more full-bodied Pinot Noir. I love it. That beefy minerality, the normally when we talk about brambly fruit, we're talking about Zins and brambly berry.
Yeah.
This is kind of brambly currant. Prune, more savory fruit, but it all kind of blends together in different things. There is that note of cherry, but it's subtle. I love this. The thing that stands out to me about this is just the nice tannic backbone that's there. It's just the spine of this wine. The reason I can't give it a number, it starts with a 9. I would like a little more of the oak on this. I think they missed the boat by not oaking a little bit more of it. I don't give a shit how much more it would have cost. But for a $12 Pinot, I couldn't recommend this highly. And this is definitely recommended for the Value Price Hall of Fame.
But it all comes down to me, doesn't it? I make and break everything.
Well, yeah, you make and break everything, all right.
So
I'm just rolling my eyes.
When I come into this wine, my feeling is it is very, very good in the price range. It lacks a little bit of finesse. It lacks a little bit of elegance. I would like to see a floral note come out. I would like to see a softer side, something that's a little more silky. This is full-bodied, actually. In this price range, it's a little... And if what you want is a big mouthfeel from a Pinot, this is your wine. I'm in an 88.
Still a good score.
Yeah, and I think this wine is a good wine. And I think it's a good representative of a style of Pinot. I, though, would prefer... It's not about... It has Burgundian flavors with Californian body. I don't know that I like that combination. I would like you to follow through on a style to the end. So if you're going to be Burgundian... Have a little bit leaner mouthfeel so other flavors can protrude.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be more Californian, then don't go the red meat route. Although, I mean, you can't. You're going to. It's easier to then not do a Californian style. This plump, ripe grape. And quite frankly, I just. It's a mismatch of those two styles. Whether it be intentional or not, that's what this is to me.
I think it's just probably just what the grape does for them. I like it.
You can get that richer feel through some techniques. Not all are nefarious, but I think that's what this is. It's a bigger version because the Chileans are ignorant in the fact that they think Americans can't appreciate subtle wines. That's what it is. And as James Suckling,
they're probably right.
I agree.
I will tell you, yes. I am really happy we're on this Chilean Pinot kick. And I am all about drinking more of it.
We're not done with it. We're not.
I'm so excited.
But anyway, an 88, 289s, that at $12.99 does get it in the Value Price Hall of Fame.
Good.
And it's a good wine. It's going to be below Apatagua. Apatagua is a better wine. Never drank Apatagua, I think that one might say that this would score higher. But I have drank Apatagua.
I don't think so. I'm comfortable with the 89. Last take, Becky and I both said this is something we would drink every day.
Is it?
What do you say?
No.
Baby.
I would not. I would drink Apatagua every day. I would drink...
It doesn't matter. No comparisons. Could you drink this every day? Is it good enough that you could drink this every day?
No.
Okay. It's too big for him.
It's just...
He's in a mood. Ask him on another day, and he'll be like, "I could drink this every day."
I would drink Love Block Pinot Noir every day.
Yeah, at $33.
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God, I'd drink that all day every day.
At $12.99, I'd drink Klein Zin every day.
I don't know, man. I might like this better than Klein Zin.
Oh, you're just
on an everyday drinker.
You gave Klein Zin a higher score.
I don't care what the score was.
Well, that is the only metric that matters. That means you lack integrity.
No. Just because something gets scored higher.
I don't want to hear
it. Doesn't mean that it's less or more drinkable.
I don't want to hear it. You're wrong. So, I would drink I don't know. What the hell do we have? I can't remember what the hell the damn name is. That Merlot we had recently. Educated guess.
Oh, Jesus.
I would drink that every day.
Well, the truth is, Apaltagua was maybe $2 more. Was it $14.99?
Apaltagua says $12.99.
Yes, right? So yeah, it's the same price.
Right. Yeah, Apaltagua, if you could get your hands on that.
You can't get your hands on this.
Eh, we can't get on this. This is not available.
No, but this is actually a good Pinot if you like a fuller style. If you don't, you don't want to touch this one. But if you like a Fuller style Pinot,
I wonder what the Pinot file would say.
It scared the shit out of me. I thought that was some random shit. I don't know where that voice came from. You damn frightening bastard!
I wonder what the Pinot file would say.
You're gonna be listening to this later in like 3 weeks in your car, and it's gonna scare the shit out of you.
Fucking bastard!
That's funny.
You're a terrifying douche. So.
You're just a scared man because this one's too big for you.
For Rob the Wine Guy, Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver, and the Triple B, we're going to bid you adieu and see you next time on the Wine Vault. Good night.